Welcome to the Deep Sea. Today I talk with Ebony, RJ's mom. RJ and my daughter had the exact same cancer diagnosis, embryonal rhabdomyosarcoma, and their tumors were almost in the exact same location with an almost identical treatment plan. There's something very comforting and bonding talking to a parent who knows the same symptoms, the same prognosis, the same chemo. I instantly connected with Ebony. It felt like we were in the exact same trench, fighting the exact same fight. Ebony and I talk about hope, faith, and how RJ was the light that Ebony clung to in her darkest moments. When you carry me to water,
you carry me away. I feel a deep connection to absolutely every parent that I meet in the oncology world. There isn't one parent I haven't been able to relate to on one of the many, many levels of a child's cancer diagnosis. These connections have quite frankly saved me. I'm going to totally date myself right now, but back in the early 90s, there was a music video by Blind Melon for their song, No Rain. And the video had this little girl in a bee costume, and she was running around dancing in the streets, and she was trying to fit in, and she was trying to find other people just like her. Other people who were dressed like a bee. And she kept getting disappointed and let down because she just didn't fit. And then at the end of the video, she finds a bunch of kids in a field and they're all dressed like bees, just like her. And she finally feels seen. That's how I feel when I meet oncology families. Like I've been walking around trying to connect, but no one is dressed like me. No one understands what I'm wearing. And then I meet one of you, and I feel seen. And I hope to God that you feel the same because it's the best feeling in the worst circumstance. Don't get me wrong, but at least we're all dressed in bee costumes together. I felt that way talking to Ebony. Even though we live in different countries and have totally different healthcare systems, because our kids had the exact same diagnosis, I felt so seen and an instant connection. Our kids both have rhabdomyosarcoma, and rhabdomyosarcoma is a soft tissue cancer. It's one of the more rare kids' cancers, but of course, it's sadly not rare enough. There are two types of rhabdo. There is alveolar and embryonal. Embryonal tumors typically occur in the head and the neck, the genital areas, the urinary glands, but it can truly show up anywhere in the body. And alveolar is not as common. It is found in the arms and legs, the chest, the abdomen. They're both very nasty tumors. They like to spread and they like to come back. The interesting thing about Ebony's son, RJ, and my daughter is that their tumors were there for a while, but because they had zero symptoms, no one thought to check for cancer. Rhabdo doesn't show up in blood, and the tumors can often be mistaken for cysts or lipomas. I can't speak for other families, of course, but for Ebony and I, it was because of actual like divine intervention that we even knew to push for further tests. And you know, our kids had tumors on their face, so we could see them. But for kids who have rhabdo internally or in harder to see areas, I mean, it might not be discovered until it has spread. And like I said, rhabdo likes to come back. And there are genetic mutations that can make it chemo resistant. And the only way to check for relapse is through scans. So Ebony and I and other rhabdo parents, we are very, very comfortable and familiar with scanxiety and the roller coaster of getting a little too comfortable. And then boom, you are back in an MRI holding your daughter or your son's hand, praying that this scan doesn't throw you back into the treatment world. I know you all know that feeling. There were so many feelings that Ebony and I both shared. We talk about comparative suffering. We talk about how RJ brought hope to kids in the cancer ward and how her unwavering faith in God gave her the courage to sit in it, to wait, and to trust. I can't wait for you to meet Ebony. So let's dive deep. I think there's two things that are like firsts for me with you. One is you're the first parent I've talked to from Texas. And second, you're
the first parent whose kid has the same diagnosis as mine. And I just feel like I feel connected to all oncology parents, but I just feel even more connected to you because we know all the same, like it's so, so similar, right?
Right. We know the keywords.
Yeah. It is kind of like a even closer bond, I almost feel like, even though we're in different countries, right. It doesn't even matter because we have seen our kids go through a very similar experience with all, like you said, all the same keywords, right?
Right. Yep.
So, but just for a little context, tell me a bit about RJ. Tell me a bit about his diagnosis, how you found out, and when you found out that he had rhabdomyosarcoma.
Okay. Well, RJ is my firstborn. He's currently 4 years old. He was diagnosed at 2.5. I had just had my daughter, Quinn. She was about 3 months old. And his face just started, one cheek started swelling up. First, it started with underneath the eye, and we thought it was allergies. It would come and it would go. But when the cheek really started swelling up, it was like, let's say August of 2022, mid-August. And he was fine. He was eating, playing, doing all the two-year-old things. And my mom was really like, why is his face swollen? And I started thinking, like, I think he bit the inside of his jaw. Thinking back now, I'm like, that does not happen when you bite the inside of your jaw. But, you know,
brain's not going to cancer.
Not at all. And no. She was like, well, that seems weird. I remember one Sunday, she was like, you know, if it's still swollen by Monday, you need to go to the doctor. So, of course, we went. It was still swollen. And it was a very relaxed environment. The pediatrician, I even have a picture of the pediatrician, like, giving him a kiss and was like, oh, this is nothing. And was like, if it's still swollen in 2 weeks, call me and you can see an ENT. Well, it was swollen in a week and my mom was still on me. So I started calling for an ENT. And of course, all the ENTs are booked until October and this is August. So, you know, my mom's just like on me. In the meantime, the doctor told me to just like rub it and I'm feeling it getting harder. So an ENT calls and it's like, hey, we have an opening. So we go. And I remember he walked in and he says, this one has me stumped. And I was like freaked out. And he was like, well, we treat aggressive things with aggressive measures. So let's start with antibiotics. So I'm like, okay. So we start antibiotics. He's like, take this for 10 days. See me on day 14. Take it for 10 days. I go out of town and my mom calls me. She's like, RJ's starting to limp. And I'm like, and she's like, you know, he's been Spider-Man all weekend. Maybe he hit his knee, hurt his knee. And I'm like, okay. So when I get back home, he's limping all the time. And he really doesn't want to walk. He wants me to carry him. But I just had a baby. So I'm thinking he's just resorting to being a baby. So we end up on day 14. Well, we had some other doctor appointments. I took him to an ER because the daycare had staff. So I was like, maybe this is staff. And they actually did an x-ray at the ER and they were like, oh, the cheek could be a salivary gland infection, which is what we were all thinking. And they're like, keep taking the antibiotics. And then they're like, the knee, there's fluid around the knee, but if he hit his knee, then it could be from that. And I was thinking, what 2-year-old gets fluid buildup? But okay, maybe that happens when you hit your leg. I don't know. So, and on day 14, we went back to the ENT and he had no scans, no imaging. He just looked at my kid and said, I think this is cancer and you need to go to Texas Children's and tell them you need a CT scan. I'm freaked out because, like, you know, in my mind, how can you make such a definitive thing without any proof? Mm-hmm. But, so it had, by this time it had gotten hard and it was swollen. He was limping. So we went and sure enough, it was rhabdomyosarcoma stage 4 because it spread and how big the tumor was. I think they said it was about 4 to 5 centimeters, across on his cheek. And then the swelling, the limping was coming from cells that had moved into the bone marrow and it was causing, there was not a tumor yet, but it was about to be a tumor. And it was about to probably, like, he was probably about to break his leg because of, you know, once it gets in, it eats it up and all that. So, yeah. So here we are with a 2.5-year-old
and a 3-month-old.
And we're learning that our kid has cancer. So,
right.
Yeah.
So just to back up for a sec, because this is really common when we think there's something wrong. Again, we never go to cancer ever. No. But I always find that there's, you know, the majority of doctors will come up with every other diagnosis, right?
Right.
Salivary gland, you know, whatever it was, right? But sometimes there's that one doctor, in your case, your ENT, who was like an angel, honestly, because, and that happens, right? Like there's sometimes along this path, along our kids, you know, their cancer story, there are these people that show up who literally guide you in the direction you have to go in. And I always want to make note of those people because sometimes it's a doctor. Sometimes it's an ultrasound tech. Sometimes it's a receptionist. I don't know. Sometimes it's a family friend, right? But there's so often we'll get these little messages where it's like, oh, wait a second. This might be more than what the medical community is letting on. And I always want to just pay attention to those people because they really are like angels to me, you know?
No, seriously, literally an angel. I'll never forget them. When we first got, you know, good scans, I called him and I thanked him because I hadn't talked to him since. I think I called him when I was like, yeah, you were right. And I told him everything. And he was very, you know, he was saddened by it until we got our first set of good scans. We called him, we let him know, you know, and he was like, we're praying for you. So we're very grateful for him because even him telling me to go to the emergency room and ask for a CT scan.
Yeah.
Like when I went there, the emergency room was looking at me crazy. Like, okay, hold on. And so he told me the exact words to say to get my child help, because if I would have had to call a specialist, I mean, it could have been a different story.
Oh, totally could have been a different story. I'm always amazed that every one of us, and by the way, there are so many threads that connect, you know, parents like us, right? And the more stories I hear, the more stories I'm privileged to hear,
right?
I pick up all of these common threads, and so many of us have just that one person. And like you said, for that ENT to go right to cancer, that's like borderline malpractice, really. Like, you can't say that. You know what I mean? Like, you shouldn't say that, but he did for a reason. Not malpractice, but you know what I mean? Like,
I mean, there was my family, you know, I called my family immediately, and my mother-in-law was very upset by that. And she was like,
sure,
we need to get his, you know, license. And it had settled my heart, like, yeah, he might be right. And I couldn't get mad because, you know, I mean, there was something that was concerning.
You know, a lot of the families that I speak to, their children's diagnosis had symptoms leading up to it.
Right.
And they actually get like physically unwell, right?
Right.
Whereas with our diagnosis, with rhabdomyosarcoma, they're like, like you said, Spider-Manning around, jumping around, everything is completely fine. And I want to talk a little bit about how strange that is to look at your perfectly healthy child. Our kids had the same. Again, there are so many similarities. My daughter's was on her cheek, on her left cheek.
Yeah.
And I just remember there was this bump growing and changing, and I was like, what is that? And they thought it was a lipoma, like a benign little fatty tissue thing. And no one thought it was anything. But I sat there and I watched it grow. And I think to myself, like, that was cancer. And I had no idea. There were no other symptoms, right?
None.
And what was that like for you? Tell me a little bit how your brain just like wrapped around the fact that it went from one end of a spectrum to the other end.
Like you all, I was watching the tumor grow. I actually was rubbing it every night, massaging it. And when I think about it, I remember it started feeling hard. And I remember I was like, I could feel, you know, so I really, and at some point I thought the stone was about to come out. So I would rub vigorously and It was not that. But it is so very strange because, you know, I remember he was due some blood work. And so I was like, you know, this is before the diagnosis. Let me get the blood work. So if anything's wrong, I remember telling my mom, if anything's wrong, it'll show up in blood. Okay. So I went, blood work's perfect. Everything's perfect. Like nothing. And so it is really strange because, you know, you, even when you're going to chemo and on the way they did the transfusions at our center, everybody's out together.
Oh, really?
So you could, oh yeah. Like you, so it's like a big lobby. And it's like high up and there's windows everywhere. It's a beautiful room. So like, if you're there, like we were late, you see the sunset, yeah. It's beautiful, but you see everybody. And so you see the different,
all kids,
like,
though.
You know, some kids,
yeah,
all kids, you see all the kids who are,
it's a children's, yeah, children's hospital. Okay.
So you're seeing all the families come, and getting the same thing. We're all sitting and waiting together. So you make friends with the parents, you see the same kids, you have your spot, and we're all getting different things. But RJ had so much energy throughout treatment. His energy level really never changed, except for like if he had like a big chemo. And it was so strange because I would be like, this kid has cancer.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, honestly, this kid has cancer. And I would always look at him like, even when we was in diagnosed in the hospital, he was fine. He was like playing Spider-Man on the bed, jumping. And I'm like, you know, I'm in between my cry sessions. Yeah. And he's just like, you know, we have nothing. And so that is like, it's really crazy because you're like, so this is a kid that is fighting. Like, you're telling me that this kid could be gone. Like when I'm looking at him and he's, seems perfectly fine.
Okay, so I have a question now. I'm picturing you in this big room with all of the other kids getting their treatment for all the different types of cancers, right?
Yeah.
So this was something that came up with me, and I want to know, I'm just curious if it came up with you or how you felt about this. You look around and you see kids who are really, really sick, and you see the parents who are really, really struggling. And I wonder, was there ever anything that made you feel, well, I don't want to put words into your mouth, but there's this term that people use called comparative suffering. And it's like, you're comparing the suffering of another kid to your kid and thinking, oh gosh, you know, that kid has it so much worse than my kid. And sometimes that can bring up feelings of like guilt, like, you know, I feel guilty that that child is suffering more than my child. And it gets kind of funny in your head because you're like, you know, not that you want your child obviously to be suffering at all, but it's like, well, how come mine isn't and that one is? And it gets complicated sometimes. Like when I see children who are experiencing their treatment so much worse than my daughter, I feel guilty. I feel so guilty that they have it worse than mine.
Yeah. I understand that completely. So RJ became a favorite, and I'm going to say favorite, in the infusion room. The only reason I can think of it is, and because everyone knew his name, everything, was because he was full of energy. Mm-hmm. And so we would be sitting in the transfusion room and kids are throwing up. Kids are just looking really weak and tired. And RJ would be running around, jumping on the, on his IV pole, saying he's the garbage truck man. And, you know, and I'm trying to get him to the restroom and he's jumping on the pole. And I felt bad because I'm like, it's almost like we're acting like here, you know what I mean? Like, but we're not. And then I was going through this, like, you know, you don't want to like show off.
Right.
And it's kind of a weird thing because, you know, no one's trying to show off.
But you want to be respectful of the kids, right?
Yeah. But I did notice with a lot of parents and kids that they would see him and they would smile. Like the kids would smile. They would look at him. They would laugh. Because at the end of the day, I feel like it brought them hope.
Yes.
to the parent also, especially if you're new to it and you're like, well, look at that kid. I mean, you know, and when you're in that situation, you look for hope wherever you can.
Yes.
I remember when we were diagnosed, there was a kid, and this is before I knew anything about cancers. So we're diagnosed and there's a teenager boy who's like big. He's like plays football. He's bald head, but he's like so healthy. And his mom and dad, they're all there and he's about to ring the bell. And he had gone through, I can't remember how long, but it wasn't nearly as long as what we were about to hold. But they were like, he's done. He's going to go play football and all the stuff. And we were just like, okay, you know, this is good. You know, and thinking back now, knowing I can't even remember what cancer he had and everybody's so different. But, you know, I was like, okay, yeah. We kept that boy was a picture for us. Like, okay, we're going to make it through and RJ's going to be able to do all these things. And, you know, everyone's different, but I feel like for RJ running around, when people would see him doing, the garbage truck man and all this stuff and dancing. And there was a time period during the holidays from November 1st until January, RJ dressed up as Santa Claus every day and almost every time we went to treatment. And some days he would be black Santa, and some days he'd be white Santa. And he would run around and say, I'm black Santa, ho, ho, ho. And, you know, it brought joy. And it was,
You know what? I'm so grateful that you just put it that way. Because you're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. It brings joy and it brings hope. And you know what? That's actually something I wanted to mention about our Facebook group, right? Because so there's a rhabdomyosarcoma Facebook group. And I know you're on it and I'm on it. And I wanted to talk a little bit about how it gave me so much hope. I mean, this group was huge for me. I want to hear about how it worked for you. But one of the things that I would search, I would go into the archives of that Facebook group to find stories of hope. When you're in the middle of treatment and you see the kids on the other side with their hair all grown back and, you know, playing football, playing sports. I mean, there was one little girl on our Facebook group who was the same age as my daughter when they were going through treatment. And now she was like playing professional soccer and she was like doing, right?
I read the story,
Anyway, I like clung to that and I clung to her story because you're right, it gave so much hope. So, you know, that group was huge for me. Some families don't want to go into any groups. They don't want to know. They want to be head down and just like get through it. But for me, I needed those other stories. Tell me about you. What did you think?
I am like you. I needed those stories. I needed that group. I sought that group out. Like, I think I did it almost immediately once. So for me, I went through a premature baby because Quinn was born early. Okay. And so when I went through like NICU and everything, I learned about, you know, that Facebook has groups. So, and those groups helped me get through a NICU and a preemie and all of those things. So when we got the diagnosis, I definitely put it in, found the groups, and I think I'm going like two or three, but the one, the rhabdo families is the most active, right? So, I found myself, you know, looking for stories of hope, but also getting a little terrified, you know, because we all, and it's one of those things where people, I learned that people often, we go there when we're scared about something or we have a scare. And so we type those things in. And some people, once their kid is, you know, done with treatment, they move on. They may not share the story of hope. And you like have to kind of look for them. And you're like, oh, his kid's doing great. Kid's married now.
I mean, I was like hooked. I was hooked. I read every single post and I asked a lot of questions too. And I mean, because you don't get a lot of the support from your doctors or from your nurses the same way you would from other families, right? And so hearing all the different tips and like the things to do, the best creams for radiation burn and like the way to get food into their system. And also I wrote down, I asked a lot of questions about like their spirits, like how to keep them, like what did you do to keep the spirits of your children up? Because, you know, sometimes they could get pretty low and I didn't know how to carry through that. Like I didn't know what things to say. For my daughter, her hair loss was a big, big deal, a big deal. Yeah. So it was really helpful to have other parents, you know, just kind of weigh in on how they navigated it.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to, you know, talking about the things that helped carry us through, your faith was and is a huge, huge part of RJ's cancer, RJ's treatment. Yeah. And, you know, we could go back to your ENT being one of those angels along the way, but I really do want to talk to you about how your faith helped you in the dark moments. And if you wanted to share anything for other families who might be in that dark place right now, what worked for you?
I've always considered myself a Christian. And I think that sometimes it's easier to say you're a Christian when everything's going great, right? And it's easy to really trust in the Lord when everything's like, but when this happened, this shook me and it shook my entire family to the core. Like we were shocked. So, I mean, honestly, but for us, I remember laying there and my mom, you know, my parents were sending us some scriptures and things of that nature. And there was something just like that came over me. And I was like, okay, it doesn't matter who we know, because we knew some oncologists. We have many friends. It didn't matter how many friends we have. It didn't matter how much money we were able to throw at this. Nothing was going to get us out of this situation. We are here. We are stuck in it. We are in the middle of it. And so it just was natural for me. The only thing is to talk to God. And for us, you know, talking to him meant praying. It meant a lot of prayer, but it also meant listening for him and waiting for him. And so we would see signs.
Like what?
ENT. I mean, when you think about it, I'm like, that was an angel. And then when we got our treatment plan, it was 66 weeks and there's 66 books of the Bible in the Bible. So we were like, okay, you know what? All right. That is it. You know, this is where we're supposed to be. This is unfortunately our story. But as we went through it, you know, I really start journaling and I would write my prayers out and I would include kids I met and things that were happening. And I would just, I mean, all you can do is wait. And we really started listening to Maverick City a lot. And they have this song called I'm Gonna Wait on You. And it's really just was the soundtrack of our lives. And it's like there's nothing we could do to get out of this. Like even if the scans were clear in December, that they were like, they could be clear, but you gotta wait this out. There was no speeding this up. And so for us, clinging to God's promises and looking for miracles each day was what we had to do. And so, you know, everyone had their role in our lives and our family, but the number one thing we did was we just prayed together. Mm-hmm. And I really do think that prayer changes everything. Mm-hmm. And I think that it helps with our mindset because, you know, it's like, why us? But then it's like, why not us? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't God use our story to help others? And through this, we've met so many families that we've been able to share RJ's testimony with.
Did you, when you first found out and you said, why us, how long did you stay in the why us place? And by the way, it's okay if like that's, there's no judgment around it whatsoever. We all all, but I'm curious about that sort of dark place and then how you make your way back to the light.
So I feel like my dark places was not like consistent. It was sporadic. You know, I would be like, this is crazy. Why us? Like, I can't believe this. I would look at friends who I was like, they feed their kid McDonald's every day. Right. Like, what is going on here? Right. And I would get really depressed. I mean, I think I was depressed the first 6 months. I know I was. I gained so much weight. I was just pretty angry. I would cry all the time. But then there would be those moments and I often say that I was mourning him. I was mourning RJ, but then I would look at him and he be up dancing. He'd run around. I'm like, how can I sit here and mourn when he's living? Like, God's like giving me like, I'm going to the treatment center and I'm seeing kids laid out and, you know, not doing well. And I'm here, you know, so for me, I went in the dark places pretty often. Like, I mean, especially like, as soon as the sun went down sometimes, yeah. Like, you know, you're in that bed by yourself, you know, you're in the bed with your husband next to you or you're by yourself and your mind starts thinking and you're upset and you're crying and you're scared. And then I'd wake up and I'd see him and he'd just be like, hey, yeah. Mom, little bald kid just running around doing his thing. And I'm like, these are when they say like each day we get new, God's grace is renewed. And you know, every morning we have new blessings and you see him. And so for me, it was like, I would go dark and I would see him and he was the light, you know, he's the light. He's happy. He doesn't even know what's going on. At one point his hair was falling out and he's like, Mommy, I need you to stop cutting my hair when I'm sleeping. And I'm like, I'm like, okay. You know, and so like, he was really getting upset with me, like, stop doing it. And I'm like, I'm sorry. And so there was this innocence with him. And so I didn't have to navigate his emotions and mine. I was able to navigate mine by keeping him happy, which would help me. It was a weird thing.
He was your light. He was your light. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And I think the reason why parents go dark is because we have the years, way more years of experience than our kids do, obviously. We've seen what cancer can do. We know what cancer, we know the stigma, we know everything that's associated with cancer. And so I think right away, we just assume the worst. And that's normal.
Yeah.
I don't know any parent who's ever been, had their child's been diagnosed where they're like, okay, well, it's going to be great. No, we all have to get thrown to the bottom and then find the things that bring us back to the top, bring us back to the light. And for everyone, that's different, right? But I love that your faith was such an important part of that crawling yourself back up. And that seeing RJ and, you know, you're right in front of you, there's this kid he's doing it. Yeah. So I've got to do it for him. You know, I've got to do it with him.
You know, and for us, we were like, RJ has always been special. He's the first grandson on both sides. I have three sisters, so he was a highly anticipated child. And then when he was born, when I was pregnant with him, I had a viral moment where I was pregnant with him, and I had a situation at Ulta here in America, and it caused my story to go viral.
What was your story?
And it was truly because, I was pregnant with RJ and I was in New York for a baby shower for him. And when I went into Ulta to get my makeup done, they told me I was too dark for the—
Who told you?
Makeup.
Makeup artist?
Makeup artist. Yeah. So she was like, yeah, we can't do your makeup. And I buy stuff from Ulta all the time. So I walked around and I pointed all the stuff that I
with use. Her like
she used okay. with her yeah I'm teaching her and I'm very pregnant. I'm like 7 or 8 months pregnant. I sit down, she does a terrible job, I still pay her, I leave, I do my baby shower for RJ, and I get on Twitter and I don't even do too much, I just tell the story. And it went viral. I mean, to the point where it was being talked on like almost every media. And at the beginning of 2020, every media company was like talking about the story. I was doing interviews. I'm like very much pregnant, doing interviews. And then Ulta reached out to me and they started a partnership with me. And this caused me to be in a realm of a social media creator, influencer. Mm-hmm. And I was able, and you know, to tell them the story. And it was really, I think the buy-in part was I was pregnant with RJ. So I was looking at it as RJ changed my life, because that moment really did. Like, I got all these partnerships, all these brand deals, like so many things were happening. Because really, if I was just a regular woman, but I think the buy-in part was I was pregnant with him. So I would say like, he changed my life. He really did. So when this happened, I'm like, well, of course this would happen. Of course, this is what happened with him. He's so special and he has a story to tell. I thought the story was about equality and makeup. But the real story is how God can take something so small and something so messy and so sticky and turn it for good.
Well, it sounds like RJ was really, he's born to be a, he's guiding you, right? Like he's like a little wise guide who is going to point you in the direction of all the places that you need to go to fulfill your purpose, right? And I love again that you shifted the perspective of seeing him as this beacon of hope for kids who are going through treatment. Yeah. And that story about Alta, can you just tell me what happened to the employee?
Well, I don't really know, but so what it did do is I really think that story is bigger than that one employee, because all these people have come out and like, oh yeah, I got my stuff done at Ulta and they didn't know what they were doing. And so I was able to really sit down with executives at Ulta and talk about it. And what happened was they ended up having an initiative where they brought in more Black owned brands. And it was able to, I think that they were able to become more cognitive of what was going on in stores and training. I'm not quite sure. I never followed up what happened with the actual makeup artist. But it was a crazy situation. And it really, I mean, the buy-in, the tags was like, lady goes in for makeup for her baby shower. And it's just all RJ. You know what I mean? So, so when I look at, my dad always says, great people always have like really crazy, challenging stories in their lives. And so I'm choosing to believe that this is RJ's story for a reason. And this is our story for a reason.
You're right. I think you have a very, very special guy there who's not done teaching you and guiding you and showing you all of the amazing things that you're going to do. I am so firmly convinced of that. And you know what? I just want to finish by saying that, like I said at the beginning, I feel so close to you because our kids went through this together. And I know as a mom and as a parent, how you felt. And, you know, that gives me comfort. That helped me through my treatment, knowing that other parents, you know, if Ebony can do it, I can do it. If this parent can do it, I can do it. And I just want us all as parents to really keep that in mind, how important it is to find each other, whether it's through a Facebook group, whether it's through, you know, other parents at the hospital or through this podcast anyway, right? But to find each other, because, you know, there's such a way to, you know, uplift us and bring us out of some of that dark spot if we know that we can do it together, right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. You know, that I really appreciate this podcast. When I saw you post that you were doing it, and I was like, well, that's a great idea. I think that when we were first diagnosed, I was looking for anywhere I could find someone giving a perspective this. And so I love what you're doing. And so thank you for the space.
Before Ebony and I had to end our call, I asked her what her favorite verse from the Bible was. And of course, to no surprise at all, she told me it was Exodus 14:14. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. Ebony's faith in God helped her during those long and awful waiting periods that we all know so well. The uncertainty and the question marks that hover over our kids. I just love how her faith was so unwavering and how RJ seems to be a genuine light, a guide in her life. I had no idea about Ebony's viral story and how she was treated at Ulta. For my Canadian friends, Ulta is kind of like Sephora. But I love how she has connected that hardship to learning and growth, the same way that she connects RJ's cancer to light and to hope for other families going through it. Ebony, thank you so much. I loved our chat, and I am so honored to know you and to be in the trenches right beside you. Thank you so much to my friend Ian Blackwood for his beautiful song, Carry Me to Water. Thank you to my friend Kate Mitzi for her logo design. And most of all, thank you to my daughter
rapport teaching me that the deeper you dive into the darkness of the ocean, the more buried treasure you will find. Until then, that's where you'll find me.